So, my dear, the day you have always dreamed of has arrived. The day you become Bride of Chaotica!
Hello, and welcome to the Brides of Chaotica podcast. I'm Taylor, a bona fide Trekkie.
And I'm Elizabeth, and I have no thoughts.
That's okay. Thoughts are not required for this show. Join us as I don't have the script pulled up. Join us as I take Elizabeth through episodes of Star Trek that I love and she has no context for, as I try to slowly indoctrinate her into the wonderful world of moral dilemmas, alien species, and good old-fashioned holodeck time. Elizabeth, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
That's the first time I've done that without a script. How'd I do?
That's honestly pretty close. I was following it along. You did a good job.
Nice.
I genuinely could not think a fact if I wanted to today.
That's okay. This is only our second episode of the season. It's okay.
And I'm not going to lie, for those that watched or not watched, I hope you're not watching. That would be impressive because we're not giving you something to watch.
Yeah, that would be some deep.
Yeah, don't be doing that. My prediction was far less chaotic and far less unhinged last episode.
That's true.
Than they normally are. And I feel deeply unsettled about that.
Oh no. That you can be unhinged today. It's okay.
It was so normal.
It was. But it was also kind of fun to see what you think an actual episode would be about as opposed to your wild shenanigans. But I do love your wild shenanigans, so it's fine.
This is why we're here, for shenanigans.
We are here for shenanigans. It's so true. So today, okay, I'm so excited for our episode today. I actually already watched it this morning.
Yeah, that tracks.
Because, well, one, I had time, and two, I think I'm going to, as a co-host for this podcast, I think I'm going to start watching it before you watch it. So that I can provide any context that's, like, integral.
Ah.
Because I mean, obviously, we're all about having Elizabeth go into the episode not knowing a goddamn thing that's going on. However,
that's
sometimes I'm noticing that maybe it's a little too much. Not that that's bad. That's not your fault. I just mean, like, sometimes there are episodes about, like, a specific species that it's, like, it's important for you to know kind of how that species works a little bit. Like, I'm not going to...
A thing, like a single fact is useful sometimes.
Right. So I'm going to have you do your little prediction today. And then I'm going to tell you just a little bit about what our species today that's kind of focused on in the episode, what their deal is historically, because I don't know that we've gone in super depth with them, but I think we've talked about them before, but we'll get into that.
I guess that it's about Romulans.
You are so wrong. That's okay. Oh, so
I really want to be right on that one. Oh, well.
You know, one day you will be.
I mean, my predictions have been 100% accurate thus far.
Absolutely all the time. 1,000%.
Every single one.
Every single one.
All of them.
So today, we're going to be watching an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Okay, cool. Let's go.
So this is not one that we watch often. I'm going to try to bring it in a little bit more because I've been watching a lot of Deep Space Nine recently and I love it. It's controversially not my favorite series, but I do love it. Like, I love the characters. I love the women on the show, especially. They're some of the most badass characters.
Like, we love women.
Like, we do love women. And they're women, they're female characters that get their due often, which is nice.
That's good.
So, but before we get into it, I want you to tell me who the fuck is in Deep Space Nine.
Okay. I have one guess off the top of my head, and I'm going to be so disappointed if I'm wrong. Is Seven of Nine in there?
No.
Fuck me. Okay. So, let me think now.
I don't remember. I think we've only watched one episode of Deep Space Nine. Oh, no, yeah, we watched two. We watched Little Green Men. I'm going to help you out just a little bit. We watched Little Green Men, and we watched Crossover with The Intendant and Major Kira.
Jesus Christ. Okay, is Belana Torres in there?
No.
Oh my god, kill me. Okay.
These are Voyager characters that you're naming. It's okay.
No. Okay. Pike is not in there. No. Oh goodness, this is bad. To be fair,
this is not your fault. This is completely mine because I have not shown you a lot of Deep Space Nine. Okay.
Let me think though.
How many Deep Space Nine episodes?
I need to let me generate. We're gonna try and I'm trying to think. Oh, is this fucking, what's his name? He's like the little, the guy. Yeah, Neelix.
Oh, no, that's still Voyager. No, not
Neelix. The other one. There's two of them I don't like. Oh, is this the little slimy bald man from the swamp? He's like the shapeshifter guy.
Yes. Yes. Odo. Well, he's that's like Odo. A swamp
creature. Okay. I don't know. What, Umo? No.
Odo.
Odo. Ugh, I don't like him. Okay. Let me think. Has this got the doctor? Fuck, what was his name? He had his his daughter in the
That's Strange New Worlds. Okay, I'm gonna give me one more guess.
I gotta at least get two. There's no Crusher and there's no Janeway in this.
That is correct.
Oh no.
Try it.
I was gonna say number one, what's her name? But that she's not in this either.
No, that's Strange New Worlds. Okay, this is my fault. This is my fault, so I'm gonna help you out.
Okay, sounds good. I got one though.
To get one. So we have Odo. We also have Quark. If you remember him. He's a Ferengi.
Yes.
We have Benjamin Sisko.
Damn.
He's the captain. He's the black man with the shaved head.
Okay.
That's Captain Sisko.
Okay.
We have Worf is actually in this one as well.
Worf is in this one?
Worf is in this one. Worf is in Deep Space Nine and TNG. Miles O'Brien, he is also
in
TNG as well as this one. We have Jadzia Dax.
Okay, goodness.
And we have Major Kira. Like I said, totally my fault. We have Dr. Bashir.
You don't remember any of these people?
That is not your fault. We have only watched a couple episodes, and those episodes didn't have a lot of characters in it. I think Crossover had Major Kira, the woman with the short hair and the ridges on her nose.
Okay. Yeah, vaguely. When you said Major Kira, I didn't even track before. I didn't even track that was one of the characters. I just thought that was someone that came up in one of the episodes.
No, it was, do you remember Crossover, the episode where they went into like that mirror universe and like the antenna was wearing like black leather and was like super sexy?
Yes. Yes. I remember that.
I knew something would jog your memory. The doctor that was like in the mines during that whole episode.
Okay. I'm vaguely remembering now.
Yeah, so in hindsight, maybe those weren't the best Deep Space Nine episodes to show you. But like I said, Deep Space Nine isn't my favorite series, so there are naturally less episodes. So I'm going to start trying to bring more of them in because I do love it and I am watching it more. And it's really good, which I knew. It's not like I don't like it.
You have your favorite series. I think that's normal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Do you remember where Deep Space Nine takes place?
In the ninth level of hell.
Okay, so that was one of your predictions during Little Green Men.
Yes.
Deep Space Nine is a stationary space station.
Ah, yes.
Called Deep Space Nine. There you go. Okay. Set your timer for unhinged prediction time with Elizabeth's mind. Okay. 4 minutes.
I thought we were doing 4.5. Nope.
You went over yesterday.
Well, I was struggling because I had to work so hard to come up with something normal.
4 minutes.
Okay, fine. There we go. Got 4 minutes, no seconds.
All right. Today's episode from Deep Space Nine is called Rejoined.
Okay, so Rejoined. Okay, I got to think about this one. So, in Deep Space Nine Rejoined, we are going to... Oh, here we go. Okay, we're good. We're cooking. So, we're going to be focusing on Odo on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on for this episode. And we're going to learn about where Odo comes from. Okay? And we are going to... I don't know what his planet's going to be called, where he and others like him come from, but we're going to that planet. You know, we'll call it Deep Space 69. And
okay.
I promise there's nothing else important there. It's just called Deep Space 69.
Totally an adult movie called that. I swear there has to be, right?
I mean, there's gotta be. There's gotta be.
What is it? Rule something? Rule 70 something? That there's like always a porn based off of everything. Anyway, keep going.
I didn't know that was a thing. Rule 70.
It doesn't matter. Do not email us about that. It will be deleted.
Yeah.
Okay, you were saying.
Okay, so the planet is called Deep Space 69. It's a planet. It's not a station. Anyways, so the people. Do they have a ship in this one, or does the Deep Space Nine thing just move?
Deep Space Nine is stationary, but they have a ship called the Defiant.
Okay, so the Defiant, so they all bloop, 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 get on the ship. They pop on over to Deep Space 69, which is a planet, not a station. And they arrive to what looks like a gelatinous desert. Okay?
Okay.
And so it's like a desert. There's like not much around, but it's all, there's like, it's almost like putty-like and jello-like.
Okay.
Okay. They see these mountains off in the distance with like a valley. It's like two mountains meeting. Okay. They're like, that's the only thing we can see. I guess we got to go there. We don't know why they're there. They're just like out exploring, you know? And so they go, they're like, yeah, let's hop on little, you know, I don't know, whatever transport. Cause it's out there, right? Like you're not walking there.
Right.
That would take days. So they're like, okay, let's hop on, I don't know, like motorbikes or something. I don't know. What do they have? How do they move quickly besides ships in Star Trek?
They just transport everywhere, buddy. I don't know. They walk a lot, honestly.
Well, transporting is not nearly as fun in this situation. Okay, they're on motorbikes, but they're kind of like hover bikes. Okay, so they hover on over there. And once they get to like the kind of valley between the mountains, it like dips down. Okay. And there's kind of, they see like a little cave. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're like, I wonder what's in here. So they're like, time to go spelunking. And so they go into the cave. Spelunking
is an underutilized word.
It really is. But also spelunking is a terrifying thing.
Yeah.
Like people just going into these little caverns, like, oh my goodness. It's like my, can't do it. I don't do well with that. So they're okay. So they go down, they don't have fears. It's not really spelunking. It's a more of an open kind of cave system. So they get down there. They're like, see this little like carved stairwell. Stairwell? Is that the right stair?
Yeah. Why not?
It's like, I don't know if it's a stairwell. It's more of just like stairs that go down.
Okay.
Staircase. I think I meant staircase. So these like carved stairs, they go down and then it kind of opens up and they see this just kind of like glowing, like bioluminescent pool. And it's not quite like water. It's like thick water.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my timer's up. I promise I'm getting there. Okay. It's like thick water. Have you heard of this? Like when people have like throat surgery or something and they have struggles like swallowing, like there's this thing called like thick water.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross. Anyways, I'm not shaming anyone for needing to drink it. I'm sorry. Just, I saw it and it just, the texture is so odd looking. Anyways, and they're like, I wonder what this is. And then Odo, he goes over to the water and he's like, I wonder what, he touches it and it starts to suck him in to like into it. And he's rejoining this pool. And then suddenly a bunch of other Odos start like popping up out of this bioluminescent thick water. And they're like, where the fuck did Odo go? Because none of these are Odo. They're just other of his species. And then they all speak at once. And they say, we are Odo. And that's how they learn where Odo comes from, but they lose Odo and we never see him again.
Bummer.
He's creepy. I don't like him.
Okay. I love Odo, but Elizabeth, I don't know how you do it. That is not what our episode is about.
Stop. Is that another episode?
But that is exactly where Odo comes from. There is a giant lake. On a planet that is just Odo species. like you don't understand that is actually completely accurate to where Odo is from. They call it the Great Link. And he goes there for a little bit and he does join the lake. Yeah.
Oh my god. I'm telling you, man, I have some sort of superpower.
Like, I hope to God that a Deep Space Nine fan is like listening to this right now and is like losing their mind. Because the whole time you were speaking, I don't know if you knew what saw me laughing, but I was laughing because of how accurate you were. Because in your brain, you're like, that's ridiculous. But that is, in fact, exactly where Odo is from.
I did it.
And he does in fact go to a planet that does kind of look like a desert with mountains.
Stop.
And I'm gonna find a picture of the Great Link for you.
Oh my god, I'm gonna die if this is what I was picturing.
And this is my favorite part of doing Unhinged
prediction time
with you. Is when it's like,
you know, accurate. These are the moments where I like really love myself.
Well, it's moments like these that make me fully just love Star Trek, because you're like, this is so unhinged. It would never be what it is. But then it is.
I'm like, you know, my brain's a special place. Sometimes it's a torture, but other times...
I don't know if you can see this on my phone very well.
I can. Stop. What the hell? Does it go down into a cave?
I feel like I remember there being a cave.
Wait, send it to me on my phone.
I'm sending it to you right now.
Okay.
But for the viewers or for the listeners, I'm showing Elizabeth that... One of the like iconic pictures of like, I think it's Odo and Kira on the like rock in the middle of the Great River.
Oh my god. Oh, okay, so the Great River is like around the rock.
Yeah, but those are all Odo's species. Like that's
okay.
Like that river.
I was picturing more of a like a bioluminescent kind of blue, but I mean I was kind of picturing a barren landscape like that. My brain, man.
I love you.
Honestly, I'm proud of myself.
As you should be.
Like, that's pretty impressive.
All right. So, now that you know where Oda's from, hello and welcome.
Yeah.
But I do want to go over really quickly the species that our episode does focus on, because they're kind of like some integral parts that they do explain throughout the show a little bit, so you won't be totally in the dark, but I do want to explain Trill. Do Trill. You know anything about Trill? Have I told you about them?
I don't think so. Do whales eat them?
No, that's krill. That's what you're thinking of.
That's so, krill.
Krill yeah. is a species in the Star Trek universe that
are they shaped like shrimp? Like
no.
little?
No, no. Oh. Just please stop talking.
I forget. Unhinged prediction time's over. I can't be predicting.
You had 4 minutes. Just stop. Okay. No. So Trill are in an episode of Next Generation, and that's where we get introduced to them for the first time. But then one of our main characters in Deep Space Nine, Jadzia Dax, is a Trill. So Trill are a symbiotic species. So on the Trill homeworld, right? There are Trill.
Oh, I just looked her up. I forgot about her. She's hot as fuck.
Yeah.
She got like fun little like
little spots on the side.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they all look like that? Are they all that hot?
Well, I mean, they're just like kind of like people, you know. Some of them are hot, some of them are not. But anyway, stop. Put your phone down. Don't look up anything. What are you doing?
She's really hot.
Yeah, I've met her. I'll tell you the story about how she, I think I have. She called me out for being a lesbian.
In a good way.
In a good way. In a good way. She was very kind and it was very hilarious. I was just embarrassed and mortified, but then I got over it and was like, yeah, that was really accurate. Anyway,
sorry.
So Trill are a symbiotic species. So there is a humanoid on the planet Trill, but there are also these symbiotes that look like big slugs.
Hello, editing room, Taylor here. For the remainder of the episode, I keep saying symbiote instead of symbiont, or I just switch it up because I can never remember in the moment which one is correct. Now, in hindsight, I still don't know. I'm pretty sure it's symbiont, so if you're a hardcore Trekkie, please don't get mad at me. I'm just a little girl doing my best. I'm really trying, and I kind of know which one is right in hindsight. Here is Elizabeth's reaction to finding out that symbionts are little slugs implanted into Trill.
Excuse me?
It's relevant to the episode, but it's not. Like they don't. So basically, there's like a set amount of the slugs, the symbiotes, on the planet, and they have hosts. So one of the symbiotes will get implanted into a host, like a humanoid, and live their life. And when that host dies, the symbiote gets planted into another host. Just listen. It's fine. I promise. So the symbiote can live hundreds of years, right? Just in different host bodies. But like the Trill, it's like really competitive to be a host. Like a lot of people on Trill, like they want to be a host. Like it's a great honor because you're helping carry this legacy and this tradition. So Jadzia Dax, she's a Trill she's a host for one of the symbionts. So the symbiont is Dax. So the Dax Trill has lived for a long time. That's why she's called Jadzia Dax. Because the host's name is Jadzia, but then she's joined with the Trill, so she's Jadzia Dax. But it's also like non-gender specific. So she, like her previous host was a man. A lot of trans people relate to this character because. You know, Jadzia Dax is like a young woman who used to be a man, it's a lot of her character bridges a lot of like gender specifics and like blurs that a little bit because as a Trill, you can be a man and then a woman and then a woman and then a man and then like there's just it doesn't matter.
Okay, so I'm understanding this right? A Trill is when the host in the symbiote, is like the slug?
The slug, yeah.
When those are like joined, that's a Trill.
Well, a Trill is just like the humanoid.
Okay. So just like the host almost. The host.
Yeah. So like the whole planet, all the humanoids are Trill, regardless of whether they have a symbiote.
Okay.
When you have a symbiote, you're called a joined Trill.
Okay.
So Jadzia Dax is a joined Trill.
Okay. And so the symbiote is non-gendered or
correct.
Okay, but
it's just the slug thing.
It's a slug with a personality and a brain, and
exactly. And so, okay. Like, as the host or as the Trill gets, as the symbiote gets transferred from host to host,
it does potentially end up in different host bodies with different gender.
Exactly. And it carries all of the memories and emotions and experiences of each host. So by the time it gets to Jadzia on its like seventh lifetime.
Ah, it's very like wise and learned.
Exactly. And so Jadzia Dax is like a 28-year-old woman, but she has the lifetime and experience of like six or seven prior hosts.
Okay, so it's not that the symbiote supplants the host like brain, it's that they exist together.
So like once you're implanted with a Trill,
mm-hmm.
if you separate, they both will die unless that symbiote is transferred into another host.
Oh, okay.
So like once you're joined, you can't be separated until like it's time to die. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then,
so like, if Jadzia Dax
then goes on to a new host,
exactly. So the slug moves on to the new host, but the host dies. The host dies. So if in an emergency like situation, or if somebody were to forcibly remove the slug from the host's body, that host would die.
Okay,
because they can no longer exist without that symbiote. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now let's say you're in like a battle situation, and the joined Trill gets shot, that also kills the slug then?
No. The host would die, but as long as the slug is transferred to another host Trill, then it's fine.
So how does the slug die? Just at the end of its life?
Mm-hmm. At the end of its life, yeah.
And question about the slugs.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason why we're hosting they're hosting the slugs? Like, are the slugs like some revered like thing?
Yeah. It's like an honored thing to be a joined Trill, and like these like symbiotes have been around for like a long time, and that's just a part of their species. That's just like how they exist. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like how we exist is how the Trill and the joined Trill exist. Like, it's not. Okay.
I mean, I guess it would be an honor to be able to be joined with someone who has like multiple lifetimes of knowledge.
Yeah. So there's like a Trill Institute where people like compete and get trained in order to like abide by all of the rules, like, and like, yeah. Make sure that they're able to like have a symbiote.
Yeah.
With, yeah.
Like, so it's joined.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's really important for our episode.
Okay.
And they do talk about it in the episode, so some of it will become more clear. I just wanted to give you a baseline of like, this is what the Trill are.
Yeah, that helps a lot. I'm still grossed out by the slug thing, but like,
you
it's
know,
fine.
You don't really have to think about it too much during the episode. It's more just like, that is a thing. I think they only show the slug a few times throughout the series.
Now, are these like human-sized slugs, or are they
they're small.
Oh,
like Trill have like a special pocket in their bodies where they go.
What, that's like kind of cute. Like, it's a little pocket pal.
Kind of.
But it's a slug.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you'd like a picture if you saw it, but don't look it up.
Okay.
I see that brain moving. Don't do it.
Okay.
If you're curious after, maybe, but I don't think you'll like it.
Okay.
So this intro has been 30 minutes long.
That's okay.
So I'm going to release you to watch the episode. I'm going to go design a Sims house, and then you just text me when you're ready.
Hell yeah.
I am so excited for this episode. It is one of my favorite episodes. It is iconic. You might cry. You might.
Really?
You might. I don't know. I think I cried the first time I saw it.
Okay. I will let you know
all
if
I... All right, let's go watch Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 6, I think? Rejoined.
Fantastic.
All right.
We're back.
Elizabeth, how you doing?
I fucking cried, dude. That's too sad.
I told you you might.
I know. Well, you know me. I also like cry at everything. But
yeah, but that's like so fair for this it episode. It
was like fucking sad. I mean, really, really good. Also, okay, on a lighter note, I am really glad that you gave me the background mm-hmm. on the Trill, because I think I would have been probably pretty confused otherwise, like, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
So that's good.
You're welcome.
But yeah, really, like, really sad. God, I'm trying to think of, like, even where to start.
It's so funny. I keep showing my people, mm-hmm. like, queer female stories. And mm-hmm. because I've seen them so many times, I forget the emotional response that they can cause. I showed my girlfriend the other day, Carol.
Oh, okay.
She hadn't seen it, and she was in tears. And which is fair, so mm-hmm. fair. And yeah, as I was watching this episode this morning, I was like, oh right,
yeah, it's a brutal one.
It's because this episode is really important for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of reasons. The primary one to me being that it's not about being gay.
No, it's just about love.
It's just about being in love. And mm-hmm. granted, yes, it is it's doing the thing where it shines a mirror to society. However, it's not like throughout the whole episode, Dax's friends are not concerned because Lenara Khan is a woman.
Yeah.
They're concerned because of Trill society, because of the repercussions of what can happen if they were to reassociate.
Yeah.
It's not like, even at the beginning, like when she's like, when Major Kira's like, you know that woman. What, like, what? And she's like, yes, she's my ex-wife. There's not, like, it's the shock of, oh, my best friend has just confronted an ex. But it's not, oh, my best friend has dated women or married women. Like, it's none of that, which is really refreshing. And I think why this episode remains to be a staple of the, like, queer representation in the franchise, because it's not, oh, no, Dax is flirting with and being with a woman. And I mean, I'm lucky enough to have already been out of the closet by the time I watched this episode, because I didn't start watching Star Trek until a few years ago. But I can only imagine the impact that it would have had on somebody who either wasn't out of the closet or was in the process of discovering who they were, and seeing this episode and seeing that it was just about, it's just about love. It's love. It's really just about love, and what that means and what that looks like across time. I mean, imagine you and Andrew, like, one of you died, but then you saw each other in another iteration, and you weren't allowed to be together.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, what was hard for me was going through this, because, I mean, you know, I hope that everybody, if they don't have it at some point in their life, that they get the chance to have that kind of love. Mm-hmm. You know, you're able to find someone that you love and that loves you, no matter who they are or who you are. But, you know, I think even if you haven't had that kind of, like, deep, like, I would say, like, romantic love yet, you can at least appreciate the idea of, like, being away from someone that you care so deeply about, and that you're basically forbidden from seeing or associating with ever again. And especially, I think what makes it so sad here too is just, like, exactly, like, how catastrophic their departure was from each other. Like, in the past life, you know? But yeah, I mean, it is interesting, kind of like you were saying, that the way they, at least the way it's portrayed in the host bodies as it is to women in this love story. But I also just found myself, like, honestly being like, kind of like you said, you just like, you don't, that's not even the initial, like, also, in, I mean, how they portray it, obviously, that's not, they don't make it into like, oh, it's a big deal because it's two women. It's just, you know, but so there's that, but it's also just like, I can only imagine when you have all of this knowledge from all of these lives, like, you know, you don't really care what the other person looks like in this current host. Like, I feel like that's not what it's about. It's very much about who this person is just at their core. And, you know, and I think that that's a really, honestly, I think even for, you know, cis heterosexual couples, I think there's something important there to recognize that, like, our, like, bodies change as we age. Like, we are not going to look, or for people that go through transitions, like, you know, I know you mentioned at the top of the episode, like, this is a really important episode, and a lot of trans people really, really, connect with it. Like, I think, you know, I am a cis woman, so I can't relate to that experience, but I can imagine, like, you know, just thinking about even how I've changed in just being married for 5 years now. Like, it's, you change so much, and like life happens. And so it's about who the person is at their core. And I think, I don't know. So I don't know. I'm kind of rambling. It was just a beautiful love story, regardless of how it was portrayed, even though that is important for representation.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but yeah, and I think it also shows, like, just love is love, you know?
And I can imagine that, like, when this episode was coming out.
good one.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't try it all. The climate around the LGBT community was just different.
Well, because, yeah, when is this, what, is this 90s or when was this?
Early 90s.
Okay.
I think at this point, season 4 of DS9, mid-90s.
Okay.
So it's in the 90s. And so it's just, like, the climate around being gay was just different. So I can imagine that seeing that on screen was, like, monumental, especially just as a queer woman, as a queer person, as, like, the trans community can relate to Jadzia Dex a lot, especially trans women, from what I've heard from, like, other podcasters and just, like, on the internet and just, like, the fan base. And so having that, this kind of representation through Jadzia Dex was perfect, because I've heard that they wanted to have it sooner, kind of representation early, sooner in the season or series.
That's good. We love that. Because
there's, like, an episode where Jadzia Dex is confronted with a past lover of Curzon Dex, who
Curzon, who
is a man.
Yeah,
who was a man.
Yeah,
and there's this moment where this, like, Jadzia Dex, this young woman and this older woman have this moment where it's like season 1 or season 2, and you're like, oh my god, are they gonna kiss? Because, like, they're essentially former lovers.
Yeah.
And they don't, and I feel like they wanted to, and this was finally the time, and I think it was great to have a whole episode dedicated to that. And it shows the societal pressures around Trill. And I think having that be, I mean, it's kind of like Measure of a Man that we watched. Like, it's shining a light on the idea of love. Like, Measure of the Man was shining a light on the idea of, like, human
and, like, rights. Personhood and autonomy and
And this show shines a light on love that even though it's not about two people of the same gender, it's just about two two Trill who were formerly involved and how societally that's not okay. Yeah. And how in our society, especially at the time and in some places in the world still, and this episode, we're recording this in the summer of 2024, just so you know. So whatever happens in November this year, rights are on the line.
Yeah.
So it's like it shines a light on what society expects even now.
Yeah.
And what that could become, and because that's still a societal pressure, you know. Mm-hmm. like me, my girlfriend and I still like some in some places I like get nervous to kiss her in public because you don't know who you're gonna come across, and it's still a societal thing of just like being safe and like being careful and like not holding hands at dinner.
Yeah.
Like in the episode. And so it's just, I like that they, I always like when Star Trek does this and they do it really well, of that mirroring society with like a little twist to make people think. And it makes me wonder, I don't know what it would have been like to be a straight person in the 90s watching this episode.
You know, I don't know.
I feel like it seems like you're meant to root for them the whole time, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, and maybe that's just because I'm a gay woman, so I'm like, yes, be together. You guys are so cute. But I feel like the point of the episode was to, no matter what you identify as or who you identify as, like, you're supposed to want them to be together because you're supposed to see the love between these two people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, and maybe, again, this is maybe going back to like thinking of the context that this episode and like the time it was released in. I wonder, I mean, because I see it too, and I'm like, you know, okay, like I'm a bisexual woman, but I'm in like a straight passing relationship, and I actually only ever really have been, but you know, well, not straight path. I am in a, you know, I'm married to a man, but you know, like I pass for straight. And so but you know, it's one of those things where I wonder if part of the way that they were able to, I don't know, maybe make it more acceptable at that point in the 90s was to have it be like that the past like lives was still a heterosexual relationship. I don't know.
Interesting. I've never thought about that.
Yeah. Like I because I was just thinking about that again, assuming that, because the vibe I was getting, I'm like, this must have been like in the 80s or 90s or something. And so I was thinking about like the historical context. And so maybe that's how they made it more, I don't know. I don't want to say the word palatable because that sounds really terrible. Like love isn't palatable. Love is love.
Yeah.
But at that time, maybe that was kind of part of the thinking, but I don't, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting thought because yeah, you do. I'm just like rooting for them because I'm like, they're people. They love each other. It doesn't matter.
You can see that they still love each other from the get. Like, and obviously that's on purpose. It's the way that Terry Farrell plays. That's the actress that plays Jadzia Dax. Mm-hmm. The way that she goes about the slight nerves, the excitement, the comfortability when they're at dinner with Julian, which is honestly,
oh my god, yeah,
Julian is the biggest ally and like best friend ever, because from day one he has a crush on Jadzia, but then obviously you realize over time that like she's not interested, so they just become really good friends. And
I didn't know that he has a crush on her like early on.
It's kind of established on like episode one that he's like, you're attractive, because
she is hot. But then he becomes such a good friend.
Yeah, to the point where he's like, I'll just sit here while he's third wheeling so fucking hard, and he's so like down about it. He's like fine. Like he's like, Julian Bashir is an ally.
Yeah. That is an ally. That is the ideal for an ally.
Like, he's like, I will sit here and be your chaperone. He's so bored. He's so like, I'm just gonna eat my little food and not know what's going on.
Picking, I don't know if it's like a cherry tomato or something. That's what it kind of looked like. But I'm just sitting there and I'm like, Jesus, this is fucking hilarious. He's just sitting there like, oh my God, these two.
But it's like, it's so cute that he's willing to do that. Because at the end of the day, like, I feel like everybody on the ship, except for like Sisko, Sisko's not down for them to be together. But I feel like that's because Sisko is like, hey, if you do this, Dax is going to die. Like the symbiote.
Yeah.
I can never say it right, is going to die. So, like, think about that. I think he's more just, like, protective of...
Yeah. I think,
you know...
That's actually an interesting thing I do want to talk about, because I do think his, Sisko's kind of approach and discussion with Dax is really interesting, because I got the vibe that he, you know, right? Like, he's the captain. Like, he automatically, in that position, you have to abide by protocol. You have to try and not make emotional decisions, or at least not like solely emotional decisions. You know, you need to have some sort of, you got to try and remain, you know, objective best that you can and rational. And so I think I got the vibe that that's where he was coming from, just as far as like Gen Z Dax, like, I'm your friend. I know how many lives, you know, you've lived. Like, I know what your society expects of you. I know what you expect of yourself, you know, and I don't want you to completely forget that. But I also I thought it was very much like a, because I think he says the line, like, make sure you're sure or something like that. And I got the vibe from him that it's like, I care about you. Obviously, I want you to be happy. But I also know that it would be a huge, huge deal for you to get exiled from your society.
Yeah.
Like, that will also create its own unhappiness, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think he's like, just weigh and balance things out. But yeah, no, I agree that like almost everybody else is just like, besides the, Lenora's brother.
Oh, I don't even know his name, but like, well, cause everybody from Trill Society is like what
they
the
know.
Fuck are you guys doing right now?
Yeah.
Like, they are very cautious. Whereas you can see like Major Kira is so like, why don't they just pick up where they left off? She's like, what the heck? They were married. Like, clearly, like, she's, I love Major Kira. She's like, it doesn't make sense to me. What if I want them to be together? Like,
I actually, when I started watching her, I remember how much I liked her.
I love Major Kira.
Yeah. Yeah. She, I was like, yeah, I know. It is really cute. She's like, you, just, they were married. What are you doing?
He's like, I don't understand. They're in love. Like, what do you mean? And Bashir's like, I don't know, buddy. I don't know what to tell you.
It is funny because, Major Kira in that moment is just giving, like, the biggest cheerleader for, like, queer love in that. And I was just like, she's like, I don't understand why it's a problem. It shouldn't be an issue. They're two people and they love each other. It's honestly, it's so, so wholesome.
It's comical. And I'm sure this is on purpose to an extent, but it's comical how much it mirrors, like, people's opinions on, like, same-sex couples. Because there are so many people that are like, absolutely not. What are you talking about? That's not right. Like, you should be exiled. And then there are other people that are like, why does it matter if people are just in love? Like, shut up.
Like, you can still be in your heterosexual relationship. It doesn't matter to you. We're not asking you.
It's so funny because, Major Kira is, like, so gung-ho. Like, Bashir is like, fine, I'll be your scapegoat, whatever. Like, Sisko is like, as long as you know what you're getting yourself into, like, just be sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's the spectrum.
Yeah.
Of people's support and lack thereof.
Yeah.
And I just love that it's such a neutral, not, it's not neutral, but it's a neutral presentation of such an issue at the time, and honestly to this day.
Yeah.
Of like, these people are just in love and they have a history and they were married and all that jazz, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The end is so sad though.
I do. It is. It's honestly, God, it's devastating. I do want to say though, just to amend my statement earlier about Sisko, in the context of the episode, I think his response is appropriate. If we're drawing a parallel with someone who's a support for someone who is like coming out or trying to kind of figure out like who they are, I don't. Again, this is just like my perspective. I realize I haven't necessarily had to face, like, I get to pass as a bisexual woman who honestly only realized recently that she's bisexual. Like, I think it's important to not like say, oh, make sure you know what you're doing. Like, people shouldn't have to hide who they are, and they should, that shouldn't be a consideration in whether people come out or, you know, but fully, like, I fully realize that, again, like we said, like a lot of times on this podcast, like, the world is still not as queer friendly as it needs to be. And not even just queer friendly, like queer safe.
Yeah.
And so I guess, I don't know what I'm saying. I guess my point is I get in the context of the episode, I think Sisko's response of like, hey, this is like your duty to your society, and you kind of signed on to this knowing what it meant. Mm-hmm. But if we're drawing the parallel, like I said, I think if you're someone who's is a support for someone who's going through that kind of experience or transition or coming out, like, I think you do have a responsibility not to like make them feel like society says you shouldn't do this and that's why you shouldn't do it.
I feel like...
Does that make sense? Sorry, I don't know if I explained that well.
No, it does make sense what you're saying. I think that Sisko's parallel would be the parent that is so worried about how society will treat their child.
Yeah, okay.
That they are, like, concerned. I'm not saying that's the right response, but I am just saying that it is a response that a lot of parents have of, that like, I don't want your life to be hard because you do this. Not that you don't have a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
I am who I am. I had to come out. It was a whole process. You were there for the whole thing.
Yeah, I was there.
And so it's like, it's not a choice. However, a lot of parents, that is one of their concerns of your life is going to be hard because of this, and I don't want your life to be hard. I feel like that is the parallel that Sisko is where he's like, oh my God, are you sure? Because this is the result.
And yeah.
I don't want you to deal with that. So I feel like his response can come off as really harsh and aggressive and like anti-love, but I don't think it is. Yeah. I think he's just so overwhelmed with concern for his friend and former mentor.
Yeah.
That he's like, make sure you're sure about this. And I mean, eventually Jadzia does make the decision.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm ready. And I think Jadzia's former hosts have all been pretty
not
rebellious. I mean, Curzon was the most rebellious, I feel like, historically, but just like,
but she's had a series of people that like question the rules and the authority.
Question the rules, take risks.
Yeah.
I mean, even though, oh God, what was his name? Tobias?
Something. Tobias, I think, yeah.
Like, even though he was described as like shy, introverted, kind of, he still was a pilot who took risks by getting on shuttlecrafts that may or may not have been ready. Hence, it led to his death. But I think that even that's evidence that like that host had a sense of risk taking. So I think for Dax, that's always been a part of each host to an extent. And that could be just a Dax symbiont thing. So each host,
that's just Dax's personality.
Right. So then it carries through. And I think it kind of mirrors in some ways a gay couple where one of you is out and the other one isn't, which I have been through before. Like, my first girlfriend that I ever dated, she wasn't out to her family when we started dating.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult for me, who was out. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. You know, everybody has their own journey, and that's okay. But I'm just saying it does create that kind of dissonance within the relationship of, like, what you can and cannot do and can and cannot say in front of these and these people. So it's, I think it mirrors that in some ways, where Lenara's like, I can't take this risk. I love you, but I can't do it, and I'm not going to. And Dax is ready to do it. Yeah. So I think it mirrors that. And it's true. There's still, especially at that time, a lot of societal pressures and concerns around being out and proud. And I think it just highlights that.
Yeah. No, that's actually, well, yeah, the Cisco point, that I think the way you explained it, that is the more accurate, like, analogy, like, analogous parallel. Mm-hmm. And I do, yeah, that I think makes more sense probably than the way I described it. And yeah, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I can understand if I were a parent to someone, to a child that, you know, is queer or is transitioning or just, like, is any part of that community and is figuring out how to exist in society. Like, it is, I can imagine it's really scary for parents. Even though you may be, I mean, super supportive. It's just like, I want to make sure you're safe because you're my child and I love you. Yeah, you make a really interesting point about the ability to take up space in a public, in public, in society. And, you know, I think it's something that, you know, today, I think it's important to acknowledge, and I think we try to do this, that, like, you know, I think you're probably lucky to be in a state that allows you to be yourself with, I don't want to assume, but, like, generally without fear.
For the most part, it only gets scary sometimes, and it's mostly men being creepy.
Yeah, it's, you know, the classic man versus bear argument.
And the bear is cuddly.
Yeah, the bear is cuddly. But, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that, like, there are plenty of pockets of this country, well, and obviously the world. I don't want to make it this a U.S. exclusive thing, but, like, plenty of pockets of the country and the world where people still are killed for being part of the queer community. And I think, you know, kind of like you were saying, if you think about the context of, like, some people are lucky to be able to grow up in a state or a place where they do have more support and do have more safety around just getting to be who they are publicly. And then there's a lot of people who have to hide that for fear of their life. And, you know, I think just besides that being completely fucked up and unfair and not okay, like, obviously we would want the entire world to be a safe space for people. I think it does, you know, kind of like you were talking about, that there is that experience of, like, in a relationship that sometimes one person is able to be more out publicly and more comfortable and feel safe enough to be who they are, and the other one isn't. And yeah, that is hard. And I think, you know, I think that's honestly part of what was so sad for me too at the end of this episode, is just, like, knowing, and it wasn't even that I, like, was upset at Lenara for it, you know, it was very much like, I understand that, like, when you decide to be a joined trill, thank you. Mm-hmm. When you just, like, when you make the decision to be a joined trill, like, yeah, I mean, like, they knew their duties, like, obviously, like, you know, Jadzia Dax knew her duties and like what you take on. But I think, you know, like I can understand Lenara, like she has all this work she wants to keep doing. And like, would that be compromised if she broke, you know, the Trill Society, like, you know, commitment that she made? And, but yeah, it's so sad. Cause I put myself in that scenario of like, if that were like Andrew and I, that would be devastating for me. Mm-hmm. Like that would be so hard. And also the idea that you suddenly run into someone that you love, like that you haven't seen and that you like lost, like they, you separated in a tragic way. Like the idea that you would be able to ignore that is just like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Sorry, I'm rambling there for a bit.
No, but like, no.
Yeah.
No, it's just, it's true. Cause yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, I understand both of their decision. I yeah. understand Jadzia's want to throw herself at Lenara and just be in love and yeah. let love happen. And I understand Lenara's choice to uphold her duty to Trill and to the yeah. symbiont, and like it both of them make sense, especially at the end of the day, like when we talk about like coming out, like in a relationship, one being out, one not fully being public about it, like at the end of the day, it, you have to be safe.
Yeah,
I don't want that. I don't want my words misconstrued at all.
I don't think anybody's taking it that way. I certainly didn't.
It's, you have to be safe. Like if yeah. you're not going to be safe, and if coming out is going to put you in danger, yeah, don't maybe. Do it until you can ensure your own safety. So there's no judgment there whatsoever. Like you have to do what is good and is going to be the best decision. And for Lenara in this context, you know, if they were to have done this, their symbiotes would die. This would be their last host. Yeah. And Trill, the whole point of like transferring hosts is, like I think Sisko said, he is to like gain the most experience and wisdom and all these things, yeah. and that would end.
Yeah, he says this like link in a chain is kind yeah. of is that line.
So I understand both of their decisions, especially because emotions and love and how you feel about somebody is so powerful and overwhelming, especially when it's not like they like got a divorce and that's not why they split up. They split up because
yeah.
Dax died.
Yeah.
And so I see both sides of their arguments, which makes it so much more devastating because it's like you can't be mad at either one. Yeah. I'm sure there are plenty of people that are like pissed at Lenara and are like, I can't believe you got on the transport and went back to, like, I get the anger that could happen there. But at the same time, it's like,
I get it. Yeah.
Because then you're ending not one life, but two in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's so devastating. But it's especially because this episode does such a good job of making them so cute together.
I know, they really are.
Like, they're when she adorable. Gives her little earrings and she's like, oh, these are for you. And I'm just like, oh my God, they're so cute.
They really are. Like, just their interactions. Oh, and when they're talking at dinner and like, oh my God. And then when they do like the first test with the wormhole
mm-hmm.
and like it works and it's like, they like, oh my gosh, it's so cute.
they do such a good job. They do such yeah. a good job with this episode, especially because I know some of the Star Trek producers at this time were not very pro LGBT. Rick Berman, looking at you. But it's like, it's nice that they did that. And it's nice that a lot of, because so many of the Trek actors are allies and yeah. are like wanted to showcase like queer love for much longer than mm-hmm. was shown on the show. And so it's nice when they actually get the chance to like do that. And it's also nice when it's like Trek is a look at a more hopeful and accepting and inclusive future. And yeah. they have in the past, like, included things that are actually representative of, like communities that aren't represented as much. And so it's nice. It's always nice to see. I know Discovery right now is, like, called the gay series because there's way more queer characters, but I also like to give a nod to the 90s ones when they were doing it, when it was like a risk.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the reason why they didn't do it in like season one or two, like I mentioned before, was because it is a risk at that time, especially in a long-standing franchise like Trek. But Trek has also always been ahead of its time and looking for towards a better future. So the fact that they do it makes sense.
Yeah. It's wonderful. It was a beautiful story.
And this isn't the only female queer kiss in Deep Space Nine.
Fantastic. We want more.
There's another one. One that I didn't. So when I watched this for the first time, I knew about this kiss because I accidentally like saw stuff about it.
Right.
Because I was like, oh my God, Gen Z is amazing. I want to look up like all of her relationship statuses before I see it. But then there's another kiss that I didn't know about, and it was between two characters I wasn't expecting, and I was like,
interesting.
And I lost it. But
is that going to be one of the episodes we watch soon coming up?
No.
No? Okay. Well,
I mean, I will try to remember to have us watch it. It's not in this season.
Sounds good. It's all good.
Okay. I also think it's really funny how during the episode, one of the first scenes, like, they have the magic scene at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, the egg! Oh, my God, that was funny.
Like, little magic tricks for Quark and Julian. Uh-huh. And I think they did that to establish that there are parts of a former host with the current host. I love, now that I'm, like, going through acting school, I love looking at the through lines and the purposes of every scene. And like, as much as that's just like a funny, silly, Gen Z is doing magic, it's also like, hey,
Gen Z is good.
Of a former host live with the current host, just so you guys know. But then as I was watching, the first thing after the cold opening is Quark getting explained to all the host iterations of Dax so that he understands. And I was literally like, that is so smart for the audience.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's like, this is when the series is still relatively episodic.
Mm-hmm.
It changes. It goes from episodic to more serialized throughout the series because like a war breaks out, it's a whole thing.
Okay.
And so it's more like you have to kind of watch it in order, but this is still one of the more episodic moments. So I like that for context, they were like, let's explain all of Dax's hosts to Quark so that the audience knows what's going on.
I always appreciate that. I'm like, oh, I see what you did there. I see what you did there, writers. Yeah, no, that was clever. But oh my God. And then when Julian I don't know what the metal was that he pulls out of Quark's ear.
It's a form of currency.
Okay.
Ferengi.
Oh, so it's like a coin behind your ear, like a quarter kind of thing. But yeah, no, that was funny. I was like, Julian does it later. I was like,
uh-huh. He's like, buddy, you should get that checked out.
I love that.
I'm like, do they just not have magic tricks on Ferenginar? Because Quark is like, how the fuck did you do that?
It's like a child when you show a child a magic trick.
Yeah. Or like it sounds silly, but and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but like when like magicians show like apes and shit like magic tricks, and then the ape is like, whoa.
Yeah. Because it's like they don't have a context for it, you know? Like they
And so it's like it made me realize in that moment, I was like, do they not have magic on Ferenginar at all?
Maybe not.
Like, it's just funny to see him be like, I know, you swallowed the egg and then regurgitated it on command. And I'm just like, oh my God, you really
know. Almost like it's like a riddle or a puzzle or something.
He's all like, it's a trick. And it's like, yeah, it's a trick, buddy. It's so cute. It's so funny.
Are Ferengi, are they like very literal people? Like, are they a very, like, literal species? Like, they don't, like, when they speak, they don't, like, see, are they serious?
No. I don't know how to describe the Ferengi. They're just the capitalist assholes. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that.
All right. Track. Let's. All right.
Can't go on a capitalism. No. Can't go on a capitalism rant every time. Yeah. But no, but it was yeah, it was cute. It was a good episode. It was sad though. I am sad. But it's like bittersweet in a way, you know, because you're like, they at least got to see each other again.
Yeah.
Which I think like when you separate in such a traumatic way initially, I'm sure there's some level of like reassurance that you at least got to, you know,
have more closure, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
Yeah, I don't know, because this was traumatic in its own way.
I know.
I'm like, oh, God. Yeah.
All right, Elizabeth. Who was your favorite character?
Definitely Jadzia Dax. Oh, actually, I don't know.
Say it.
I don't know, Julian?
I knew you were missing Julian.
Actually, I think Julian might have been my favorite. Because he's just so cute. He's such a sweet little boy.
He was like bro code all the way.
Yeah.
This episode. Sometimes Julian can be pretty annoying, not even gonna lie. But this episode is one of my favorite Julian episodes, because even though it's not about him, he's literally like just sitting there helping his friend.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Julian might be my favorite. Yeah. Although I did really enjoy getting to like reacquaint myself with Jadzia Dax.
I love her. She's the best.
She's a badass and she's so hot.
Also, yes. I can't wait till you find out who she like ends up with.
Oh, does she have like a final person?
Mm-hmm. She gets married to someone during the show. It's really cute.
Oh. That is cute.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Well, for another time.
Well, you can find us on Instagram at Brides of Chaotica Pod. And if you want to email us for whatever reason, you can email us at bridesofchaotica@gmail.com.
Tune in next week to find out which episode of Star Trek I'm going to have Elizabeth watch next.
Bye.
Bye.
Somehow I feel comfortable here.
I just rolled out of bed.
You look cute too. You look great.
You know?
Am I getting old? Do I have this little wrinkle here? Do you see that? What the fuck? Do you see that?